It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Joining us this hour, Dave Anderson in our Ames studio, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Stepping into our Des Moines studio, Rachel Caulfield, Associate Professor of Political Science at Drake University. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
What do we talk about?
I don't know. It's another slow news day.
The past week, I walked out of the studio talking to Emily, my producer, and we had a sort of a plan of what we would talk about. And my last comment was, but something this evening will happen that will probably overturn all of our plans, as it did last week as well, which in fact did happen. What a week it has been. We want to have our listeners join in our conversation with your observations, your questions, your reaction to, I hope you can let this go. That is the reported words, alleged words of Donald Trump to FBI Director, former FBI Director Comey, when he was director in February at a one-on-one meeting, according to Comey's notes. I guess regardless of where that path goes from here, those will be remembered, those words. The Washington Post summing up the dilemma in a headline. I wanted to see, Dave and Rachel, if you see it this way, too, as one of the dilemmas. Republicans' difficult fork in the road to take Trump at his word or not and see where it leads. Fork in the road for Republicans, Dave?
Yes, Republicans are going to have to continue to decide whether they're going to stick by the president or not. It would be easy if there was just one issue we were talking about and Republicans could say, you know, it's an isolated incident, it's being overblown. But every day seems to be another scandal or a new version of a scandal out of the White House. And I think Republicans in Congress are getting really tired of this. They've been looking forward to having a majority for a really long time. They have an agenda they're ready to move forward on. And they can't get by scandal.
Just in this last week, of course, a week ago, the news breaking of Trump's dismissal of FBI Director James Comey. Then the reported disclosure of highly classified information given to Russian officials. Then yesterday, late, the alleged urging of Comey to end his investigation into now fired National Security Advisor Michael Flynn with those words, I hope you can let this go. Let's listen to some reaction. Last night on the Senate floor, a speech given by the Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Charles Schumer, expressing his concern over this past week's news.
Mr. President, in a week full of revelation after revelation, on a day when we thought things couldn't get any worse, they have. I was shaken by the report in the New York Times that alleged that the president tried to shut down an active FBI investigation into a close political associate. And we are only one day removed from stunning allegations that the president may have divulged classified information to a known adversary. Concerns about our national security, the rule of law, the independence of our nation's highest law enforcement agencies are mounting. The country is being tested in unprecedented ways. I say to all of my colleagues in the Senate, history is watching.
Okay, Charles Schumer yesterday, lest you think it's only Democratic voices, and they have been chiming in for some time. Let's go to an interview with CBS News' Bob Schieffer yesterday evening at an International Republican Institute event. Republican John McCain said the events of recent are comparable. This is an astounding clip, comparable to the Watergate scandal of the 1970s, coming from Republican John McCain.
Bob, the only thing I can say is I think we've seen this movie before. I think it's reaching the point where it's of Watergate size and scale and a couple of other scandals that you and I have seen. It's a centipede that the shoe continues to drop. And every couple of days, there's a new aspect of this really unhappy situation. And you know, my friends, none of us, no matter what our political leanings are, no matter how we feel about Trump, feel this is not good for America. We've got a crowded agenda. We've got, particularly speaking as a Republican, we have to do reform of Obamacare and replacement. We have to work on the tax reform. We have a number of agenda items, and I have to honestly speak to truth to my Republican friends. I don't see how you can say that just the confirmation of Judge Gorsuch is enough of a record for us to stand before the American people in 2018.
Senator John McCain yesterday. Well, with those voices in mind, Charles Schumer, John McCain, two of the leading voices in our Senate. Rachel, let me go to you first. What we've experienced over the last 24 hours, the last week, do you think it's moving congressional Republicans off of where most of them are, certainly not where John McCain is, but most are in the stay the course with the president?
Well, I think there are a lot of Republicans right now who are at least privately expressing some pretty significant concerns about where this is all leading. It's one thing to have one revelation and you know, Republicans in Congress kind of regroup and figure out how to talk their way through it. And at this point, there have been enough of these incidents. And this last revelation by Comey last night, you know, when you're a real estate developer in the business elite of New York City and you pull someone aside and you say, hey, is there any way we might, you know, find a way to see past this? Anything you could do for me on that front? That's one thing. When you're president of the United States and you're having that conversation with the nation's chief law enforcement officer, it's called obstruction of justice. And so, you know, at this point, it becomes harder and harder to defend these actions. And I think many of them are honest mistakes by a president who did not fully anticipate how difficult this job is and the rigor and procedure and protocols that go into being president. But nonetheless, we have these series of incidents, and Republicans on the Hill are getting to a point where it's hard to ignore them.
Mm-hmm. Dave, do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I think Rachel is absolutely right. It's a great analogy in that, you know, Trump grew up in a lifestyle in New York where he was a very wealthy guy and he pushed through business deals. This is what he did. And it is becoming really clear, I think it was clear before the election to a lot of people, that he really does not understand what the job of the president is, and he doesn't understand the history of the office, the protocol of the office. And there is a steep learning curve involved. Every president who walks into the job is very quickly overwhelmed by it and very quickly retools their behavior to kind of match the expectations of the office. But we're not seeing Trump do this. Mm-hmm. It's like every day he does something new.
Well, the question that Rachel raised, that's been raised, does this rise to the level of obstruction of justice? Dave, do you believe it does, or is that a matter of interpretation?
I think that's a matter of interpretation because you have to know the context of the entire conversation, and you also have to kind of infer what you want out of what Trump was saying. Was Trump telling the director of the FBI to stop investigating Michael Flynn? If so, that's obstruction. Was he just saying, like, hey, you know, if there's nothing there, just let it go. Don't drag this out. If he's saying that, maybe that's not obstruction. Maybe that's just kind of an improper thing for a president to say. We would need a lot more information to figure that out. And
yeah,
if this was the only issue, we might get to the bottom of it. But it's inevitable that by tomorrow, something else is going to happen, and we're going to push this to the side and start talking about the new issue.
Dave Anderson of Iowa State University, Rachel Caulfield of Drake University. We invite your calls, your questions, your comments, 1-866-780-9100. News of the past couple of days has pitted journalists and their sources versus the Trump administration. I think Reggie in Oskaloosa wants to address some aspect of that. Hi, Reggie. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I'm just wondering why we're not discussing. You know, the Washington Post has been caught lying repeatedly in the last few weeks.
When?
They said the new deputy director of the FBI, after the Comey firing, was going to resign. That was never said. And the Trump, where he gave away the information to the Russians, supposedly. Everyone else in that room has said it never happened. They all said Trump was never alone with anyone.
Mm-hmm. What's your larger point?
The NSA director actually said Trump was not given that information that the Washington Post said he gave away.
Okay,
Reggie, before we put this to Rachel and Dave,
what's your larger point here? Can you encapsulate what you're asking or what you're putting to them?
I'm saying that the Washington Post and a lot of the media hated Trump, hate everything he stands for. They're pissed off because Hillary lost, and they're just trying to get him out.
Okay, Reggie.
You know, they're twisting it and making things up to try and, you know, they're doing more danger to the country, the intelligence community, than Trump ever could.
Okay, Reggie, thanks for your perspective. Let's put Rachel, how do you react to Reggie's viewpoint? Certainly not a fringe viewpoint. There are still plenty of, according to polls, plenty of people backing Donald Trump and seeing it more or less through that perspective.
Absolutely. And President Trump himself, I think, has really used the media as a foil in a lot of his speeches and public comments. So that's to be expected. Having said that, you know, there is definitely a problem with people leaking information. That's a problem. There's definitely a problem when journalists use unnamed sources. And it is true that media engages in this kind of pile-on effect, the feeding frenzy, right? When they smell blood, they go after it. And that's true of all media. It's dramatic. It makes people watch the news. That's what they want. They're a business. So there are a number of kind of pathologies of our system of journalism right now that we're seeing alongside pathologies of our political system. Having said that, one of the problems here is that, you know, in a typical White House, the White House huddles, figures out how they're going to respond to information or allegations, and then they send out a series of spokespeople who know how to work with the media establishment. In this case, they've tried to do that on any number of these situations, and inevitably, they step on each other's toes and end up sending out multiple messages, all of which contradict each other. The president is contradicting his own spokespeople. So it's the president himself who said, yeah, I have every right to give out information to the Russians if I want to. Well, okay. He's not wrong. That's not illegal. As president, by definition, he can share classified information. That's the law. But all of his spokespeople had already been out on all the news programs saying this never happened. So, you know, when you don't have your messaging down, then, you know, the media starts to smell blood really easily and that feeding frenzy begins.
Mm-hmm. Dave Anderson, do you get Reggie's point here? See it through his eyes to any degree?
Well, I understand his point that he does not trust the reporting of the Washington Post, probably of the New York Times or most of the major mainstream media outlets. But what I would say is, most of what they're reporting has been corroborated. The Post came out and said Trump revealed classified information. And the White House first came out and said, no, we didn't. And then Trump himself came out and said, well, yes, I did, but I'm allowed to do that. And then General McMaster came out and said, well, he didn't reveal the information about how we obtained that information. And then somebody else came out and said, yeah, he didn't even know how we obtained the information. But that was not the allegation the Post made. The Post said he revealed classified information. The important thing is not where it came from, how it was obtained. It was that he revealed information that there was no plan or intent to reveal. He probably should not have. He made a spur-of-the-moment decision to reveal highly classified, sensitive information. And it sticks with Trump. One of the reasons why this is such a big issue is that half of his reason for being a candidate was he said Hillary Clinton is unfit for office because she's cavalier with classified information. She had an email server. There were 8 investigations about the email server or things related to Hillary Clinton that were largely run by Republicans saying, see, she's unfit because she doesn't handle this stuff carefully. And what happens? On the day of or the day after that President Trump fires the FBI director, that it later comes out he was at least considering investigations into Russia. The day after, he meets with the Russian foreign relations advisor, ambassador, and discloses information that he had not planned on disclosing. This was not that he had gone through a process with his advisors and said, this is something we should share. He just, on the spur of the moment, shared it. This is why people are concerned, because this is the kind of thing that Trump himself said we should not be doing and we should be afraid of.
Dave Anderson of Iowa State University, Rachel Caulfield with us of Drake University, doing some analysis of the very, very busy last few days in Washington, the revelations that we've had over the last few days. If you just missed us talking about just a week ago, it seems like a lot longer than just a week ago, the dismissal of FBI Director James Comey, the reported disclosure of highly classified information to Russian officials by President Trump, which Dave was just referring to, and then last night the alleged urging of Comey to end his investigation into the now-fired National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn. A lot of people want to input. Here is some input happening in Washington right now. Politico reporter tweeting out that the Senate Judiciary Committee has demanded documents from the FBI and the White House on the Russia matter. Another drip to add to the many drips that have come before it. The Senate Judiciary Committee requesting the memos detailed by the New York Times from Comey. So they're acting on these leaks here. Mary from Red Oak listening wants to know why the two of you, Dave and Rachel, think Grassley, Senators Grassley and Joni Ernst, are sitting on the sidelines. She says Grassley has a long history of being critical of officials, and Mary is shocked by their inaction. Rachel, do you want to take that?
Well,
because we have a small group of senators, John McCain, Lisa Murkowski, Lindsey Graham, have been really highly critical of the president. They are big names. But then we have a larger group of people who are saying little or next to nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, members of Congress are first and foremost responsive to their constituencies. And so every member of Congress is, I think, keeping a close eye on where their constituents are on these issues. And they're painfully aware of the need to, you know, think about their own electoral situation. In addition, right now, if you're a Republican on the Hill, you are either part of the group of Republicans who is, and members of Congress more generally, who is charged with investigating or being a part of these conversations, or you are not. The Intelligence Committee is not a committee, both in the House and the Senate. These are not committees that have open public hearings generally, and everybody gets to know everything that the Intelligence Committees know. The Intelligence Committees hold on to a lot of classified information, and they are expected to kind of serve in an informational role in Congress to kind of help steer the ship on intelligence matters and oversee intelligence agencies. Right now, a lot of this has been limited to those intelligence committees. What we're seeing now is it's starting to broaden out, and more members of Congress, including the Senate Judiciary Committee, which of course is chaired by Chuck Grassley, and the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Intelligence Committee, but we're starting to see more public conversations among a broader range of members of Congress, including Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're moving closer to an independent investigation, an independent prosecutor, Rachel?
I know at this point it would be, in my mind, it's hard for me to imagine how Congress or the White House could proceed and legitimately proceed to ease people's concerns without an independent prosecutor, an independent investigation.
Dave, you see it as unavoidable too?
I think we're getting to that point. I think the Republican Party in particular has to be really careful about making sure that this does not turn into a chance for it to be perceived as partisan. If the investigations remain in Congress and there's another incident where it looks like the Republican chair or members of the committee are trying to protect the president, that is really damaging. And the party has got to be doing damage control.
Okay. From that same Politico reporter I mentioned before, another tweet just currently happening as we speak. Senator Grassley says, we need all those memos, he told a reporter. And when asked, he said, probably yes. He will ask Comey to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Let's try to squeeze in a call before our break. Nick is in Des Moines. Hi, Nick. What's your reaction, your question to all of the news of the last few days from Washington?
Hello. Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I look at the biggest question that I have, I suppose, would be an accountability standpoint. And so a great example of that might be whenever we try to discuss a partisan politics and we look at how CNN presents a story versus Fox. But now we're calling for a bipartisan committee into the Russian-Trump ties. But similarly, we look at Hillary and the email servers as being something that was a partisan attack by Republicans. And it took digging through the Benghazi case. Similarly, though, to ask for this kind of accountability, why isn't the left wasn't there, so to speak, whenever you look around at the media. And similarly, now there's a majority of a more left-leaning liberal media out there. And so I think that's where a lot of the attack comes. And so my question to, I think, would be a great question to Donald Trump supporters at the same time, and to reverse that as well, is what does it take for Donald Trump to do wrong? Because what did it take for Hillary Clinton to do wrong to not vote for her? And so I look at that being the great question that I have whenever I look at the media and a lot of the reporting that happens. The Washington Post wanted to be the first to get the scoop, and instead of clarifying that the story was Donald Trump releases classified information, when it turns out it was classified information but wasn't put out there in the right context, giving the right, in this case, the ability to finagle around that question. And so okay. I look at the media trying to get the scoop so quickly and that accountability standard coming in.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. We were going to break. I had my finger. That was not intentional. Dave Anderson, I think we got the point Nick was making there. Sorry again, Nick. But Dave Anderson, do you see Nick's point?
Yeah, I think Nick has a great point that we live in very partisan times. And right now there's a big question about, well, what is it going to take to shake Republicans' faith in Trump? And the same question could be asked of Democrats. What would it have taken to shake your faith in Hillary Clinton? With Clinton, right. We went through 8 investigations, I think. Maybe it was 9. In committees in Congress, independent prosecutors. Maybe it's time to try it on the other side.
Okay, Dave Anderson is with us from Iowa State University. Rachel Caulfield from Drake University. Interesting point. Trump's approval rating has been dropping, but he still retains the support of his core constituency. Does it matter to the base if they're being told of this reporting? New York Times, Washington Post, or does it not matter at all? We're hearing your input, your questions, as we digest the last few days of political news, revelations, scandal out of Washington. 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer, back in just a few minutes. And we are back. It's a Wednesday politics edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with Rachel Caulfield of Drake University, Dave Anderson of Iowa State University, our analysts picking apart a very full week of political developments from Washington. Just a week ago, Donald Trump's dismissal of Director James Comey of the FBI. Then we had late last week the disclosure of highly classified information to Russian officials by the president. Then yesterday, the alleged urging of Comey to end his investigation into now-fired National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. We're getting your questions, your comments, about also whether the mainstream media are being fair in their pursuit of this story. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Let's listen to National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. This is going to the second of those 3 points, the reports of highly classified information being disclosed to Russian officials when asked yesterday whether he sticks by his assertion that the Washington Post put out in its Monday edition. He says he does.
No, I stand by my statement that I made yesterday. And what I'm saying is really the premise of that article is false, that in any way the president had a conversation that was inappropriate or that resulted in any kind of lapse in national security. And so I think the real issue, and I think what I'd like to see really debated more, is that our national security has been put at risk by those violating confidentiality. and those releasing information to the press that could be used connected with other information available to make American citizens and others more vulnerable.
Okay, so the National Security Advisor saying, hey, here the real threat are the leakers here. Dave Anderson, give us your view on that that different perspective.
Well, on the issue of leakers, the Trump White House has seen just an enormous amount of leaked information. And a lot of people, including President Trump himself, have said that he wants this stopped. He wants to find out who's leaking information and find a way to stop them. He's suggested it's criminal. The question really becomes at some point, why are so many people within the Trump administration choosing to call press agencies and tell them this information?
And what's your answer to that, Dave?
The answer really kind of has to be that they're concerned, that they are seeing a president who is acting completely different than other presidents. And to be fair, President Trump was elected by his supporters because he said he would do things differently. But people who have been in the national security industry for 30 years get very nervous when they see presidents do things that have never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they feel compelled to leak information and inform the public so the public is aware.
Rachel, what do you say about the, I don't know if we can say unprecedented leaking from a presidential administration, but a lot of leaking going on. Rachel, are you there?
I am.
Okay, I'm hearing you now. We're talking about Dave's comment about leaking here. The question of why we're seeing so many leaks. Dave's saying it's the best guess is there are a lot of concerned people working under this administration.
I think that's true. I think one of the things that we often forget is the sheer number of people who work in the executive branch of government who have no allegiance to the president whatsoever. They are civil servants. They are not political appointees. They were there for the last president. They will be there for the next president. So
they are sometimes called the deep state.
That's right. They are sometimes called the deep state, sometimes called the bureaucracy,
whatever you'd
like to call them. They have no political allegiance to Donald Trump. And so when they see things, and Donald Trump himself has recognized this, and many of his supporters have recognized this, some of them are actively opposed to Donald Trump. And so they see an opportunity to call him to account by leaking information that, you know, that concerns them. Some of them, I think, are very genuine in their, you know, very simple. They want to be a whistleblower. They see something that they think is unprecedented, is wrong, concerns them. It's not the way any other president has done it, what have you. And they say, you know, this is something that the American people need to know about. And one of the interesting things to me, to link back to a past question that we had about Senator Grassley, you know, Senator Grassley in his time in the Senate, this is not the thing that most people pay most attention to, but he has been particularly active on empowering whistleblowers for the purposes of holding government accountable when there is wrongdoing.
Right. Yeah.
And so it doesn't surprise me at all that now the Senate Judiciary Committee, under his leadership, is looking to be active in this.
Let's go back to our phones. James is listening. James is from Des Moines, but I understand you're not in Des Moines right now. Go ahead, James. Hi.
Well, you know, when you look at all of what's going on, you have to stop being blinded by the smoke. There's only one thing that you need to look at, and that's the words right out of Trump's mouth. He said that he told the Russians about information provided by a third-party country that was so sensitive that it wasn't widely dispersed in the people with top-secret clearances. Why are we all debating about all this other stuff when we have the words out of Trump's mouth that he, in fact, told the Russians this, and it doesn't give him any solace that he said that he was trying to save lives? What he's done is that he's endangered lives. I doubt that we're going to get that kind of cooperation from the country that provided that information. I understand that it might be Israel, but I doubt that we're going to get that kind of information out of them in the future. And to say fair and balanced, the minute you say you got to be fair, you got to be balanced, I'm telling you, you're neither. You need to report the facts. You know, I got a son that tells me this obscure guy wrote a thing that all of this is persecuting Trump. I didn't ask Trump to run for president. Trump wanted to run for president. He knew what he was getting into.
Okay.
It's not an easy job. Look at every president we've had since in my lifetime. I'm 72 years old, and every one of them have aged, instead of 4 years, 20. Instead of 8 years, 30. So why are we even spending time on this? Let's go after Trump for the words out of his mouth.
Okay.
I told the Russians confidential secret information.
Okay, James, thank you very much for your viewpoint. James from Des Moines. Open and shut case for James in Des Moines, not so for other people, Dave Anderson. There is another side to that. What James calls smoke is not what other people see as smoke. They see it as exactly reversed.
No, I think what James is really talking about is that there's a lot of nuance here that we get kind of stuck talking about. And a lot of people are defending Trump, saying, you know, he didn't break any laws. He is the president of the United States. He can talk about whatever he wants. And they are completely right. As president of the United States, President Trump is the only person who can tell anybody anything. He has the power to declassify anything he wants at any time. What is concerning is that presidents don't do that. Presidents usually talk to their national security team and carefully vet what they are going to tell to foreign nations. And they take their time on this. They make very thoughtful, deliberate decisions. And they figure out exactly how they're going to release information if they're going to do that. And this is not what Donald Trump did. All the reports out of that room say that Donald Trump kind of flippantly just said, hey, yeah, our intelligence apparatus is awesome. Let me tell you what we know, because you may need to know this. And that's just concerning because it means he's casual with some secrets. And these weren't even our secrets. These were secrets that were given to us by someone else who now has to weigh the cost of telling us things in the future.
And the caller is absolutely right. I think the bigger question, because it's not illegal for Trump to share this information if, in fact, he did so. And he himself has indicated that he did. But the intelligence relationships are so essential. We have to be able to collaborate with foreign countries in our intelligence gathering efforts. And particularly with Trump's trip to the Middle East, you know, this is going to be a strained relationship, I expect, for a while.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the new FBI director before Donald Trump takes his first overseas trip here, but leaving on Friday. Possibly the announcement of a new FBI director in the wake of James Comey's dismissal. We heard just in the last day or two that neither Merrick Garland nor Senator John Cornyn of Texas will be the new FBI director. They're not interested. The majority leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, actually suggesting Garland there. That's an interesting thing. Let's listen to Charles Grassley, though. His Judiciary Committee provides oversight of the FBI, which needs a new director. Senator Grassley didn't list his favorite of the names that have been put forth, but he said the new director needs to be independent.
Obviously not close to Trump, and obviously, very obviously, not involved in any way with the Trump campaign. And this independence is very necessary to restore trust in the FBI.
Okay, Charles Grassley there. Dave, who would be interested in such a job fraught with the politics and controversy of the current moment? Not to mention the question of job security, right?
Right. I can think of plenty of people who would be interested in it. But it's a really dangerous job to accept right now because this is not going to be a purely nonpartisan, just cut and dry job at this moment. Becoming the FBI director means you are going to have to overtake all of the investigations into the Trump administration, and that is fraught with concerns. And Donald Trump has to appoint somebody who the rest of the nation can trust. The idea that he has floated the idea of appointing elected Republican officials, it does signal that Donald Trump does not have much political experience. Because no elected politician would think this is a good idea. Right now, he has to protect himself, not from legal maneuvers, but from public image. He just has to make sure, like, he is giving this investigation a fair opportunity to proceed, and he has to find somebody that other people are not going to point a finger at and say, hey, that's a partisan hack.
So what is the hurdle in the Senate for approving his nominee? Is that a simple majority, or do we have to get a supermajority?
I think you're going to require a supermajority on this. I think the rules may only require a majority at this point for this appointment.
Right.
But the Democratic Party is going to howl loudly if this looks like it's a partisan appointment. The Trump administration just can't afford another stink.
And perhaps past Senate rules, it's more important that this person is seen in the eyes, Rachel, of the American people as someone who is credible and independent.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's absolutely essential at this point. And, you know, I think there are folks inside the Trump administration who understand that very clearly. But then, you know, you have the president himself, and he ultimately gets to make that decision. And his political instincts are not finely honed. there's a lot of baggage around this appointment. Everybody knows that. Among the people who have been in for interviews, I think three of them have already said they will not take the job, including Senator Cornyn. So there are, you know, there are a lot of landmines here that have to be negotiated, and how the White House chooses to do that, particularly in this time, this period of time, it's a very short period of time where all this other stuff is going on that they have to try to negotiate. It's going to be very hard. Remember that a lot of the positions in the Trump administration have yet to be filled. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they have a deep bench to rely on. I think they're being easily distracted by a lot of unforced errors right now. And, you know, fully vetting people and negotiating a tough political environment, that's going to be a real challenge.
Okay, we have 7 or 8 minutes left with Rachel Caulfield and Dave Anderson. Let's go back to our phones. Mary in Mount Pleasant is listening. Hi, Mary. I'll have to ask you to make it brief, please, but what would you like to chip in?
Yes. My question is this the right time to be sending Trump overseas to represent us and to talk to these world leaders when you consider that he has only like a 37% approval rating and all the turmoil and controversy surrounding him right now?
All right, Mary, good question. But I don't think anybody but the president sends himself overseas. So. he is the one who decides that. He's going to be joined by his first lady, Melania Trump, leaving Friday for the first foreign trip of his presidency, Saudi Arabia, Israel, the Vatican, Brussels, Sicily, I believe, on this as well. So some reflections on this first foreign trip in light of the controversy. For instance, Rachel, will we hear, we had the Turkish leader visit the White House this week. Didn't hear much about that in the news, did we?
No.
All the chaos in the White House covered it up in terms of the news coverage. Do you expect the same?
Well, I think what the White House is hoping is that in sending him on this first big foreign trip, they can kind of press the reset button, and he will appear presidential, and he will be out visiting with foreign dignitaries and talking about cooperation to fight ISIS, and, you know, it'll create a new narrative for their presidency. And then, of course, he ends the trip in Brussels with NATO. So when you put, you know, I think they hope to press the reset button. Whether or not that happens depends a great deal on how this trip goes, right? So we know he's going to be in Israel. Well, there are reports that he disclosed sensitive information that was given to us from Israel. That could be a tough conversation for him. That's not a given.
Right. And Dave Anderson, weigh in on this. The controversy doesn't simply go over there. Our president doesn't simply go out there without the baggage that he has surrounding himself here on this continent.
No. And in particular, this baggage is going to follow him into all of his meetings. He's going to go to Saudi Arabia and Israel, two places that are deeply concerned about ISIS. And this is in some ways one of the worst places in the world to go, because the conflict in the Middle East is so nuanced and so difficult to get your mind around. And Donald Trump is not known for dealing with nuance and detail well. This is not where he wants to start a foreign relations trip. He has to hope that he can get out of the Middle East without another mistake and another gaffe.
But then as soon as he leaves the Middle East, he's going to Brussels to meet with NATO. And let's just say that there's been some tension between Donald Trump and NATO.
Mm-hmm. So it might be a good time to have a quick return home.
Uh-huh. It's going to be really interesting to see how this trip and these very tricky relationships that he's trying to negotiate right now, it's going to be really interesting to see how it, first of all, plays in the American media, and second of all, the extent to which the baggage back home interferes with the trip.
The president talking with graduating Coast Guard cadets today, telling them that life is unfair, and saying that no politician has been treated worse or more unfairly.
Really, just quote, your average graduation speech.
here he is, a quote from Donald Trump today. No politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly. Let me give you a quote from the National Review, the conservative magazine, National Review. Have you react to that? This is sort of a bigger picture of the conservative agenda in light of all the controversy surrounding this White House. Quote, the sheer effort of having to discount the endless stream of controversies is taking a toll on conservative energy and activism. A bit later in the article, Trump voters may think that the Russian collusion story is a crock, that Comey deserved to be fired, and that disclosing Israeli intelligence to Moscow isn't treason, but neither are there any signs that they're all that excited about what this administration is doing. So I guess the larger question this National Review writer is getting to is, what is this doing to the conservative movement? Now, all the energy that we saw getting Donald Trump elected and the people having heartfelt conservative ideas.
This is probably not very good for the movement. And to be fair, I don't think it's because Trump is this exceptional figure. He is in some ways an exaggeration of what the movement has been arguing for a long time, that you don't need political experience, you don't need political expertise, that issues aren't complicated, they're easy with simple solutions. And Donald Trump is an exaggeration of this idea, and we're seeing what happens when someone like him gets in office. You see a lot of mistakes, unforced errors, things that just go against the grain of what we need our government to do, and people don't like it.
Mm-hmm. What about the conservative agenda that we see in front of us, Rachel Caulfield, tax reform, health care reform, that supposed big infrastructure investment?
Well, I think this is why we're hearing, congressional Republicans now publicly saying, we could do with a little less drama.
right.
We have
Mitch
an agenda.
McConnell, yeah, say
we have
please.
An agenda that we want to be able to work towards. And right now, they're finding themselves distracted by something new every day, and they don't know what's coming down the pike next. Everybody who works in policy, there's enough uncertainty in the policy process without all of the drama coming from these revelations that come out day by day. And so, the greater the uncertainty and the greater the distraction, the harder it is to move forward. I don't think there's any question but that we're living through a period of kind of disjunctive politics. Yeah. The Republican Party right now is highly factionalized.
As are the Democrats.
As are the Democrats. That's absolutely true. We're seeing it, I think, more for the Republicans because we have unified Republican control of government. And yet they're having a really hard time moving forward with their agenda.
Mm-hmm. And I would also point out the one real agenda item they moved forward on did not go well.
That's right.
They finally passed kind of a repeal and replace bill that they've been touting for 8 years was going to be so simple and so great and so wonderful. But instead of ever having a public hearing, it was crafted behind closed doors. They didn't get it scored by the CBO. They passed it without their members knowing what was really in the bill. It's not going well.
Okay, Dave Anderson, to be continued. Dave Anderson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Rachel Caulfield, Associate Professor of Political Science at Drake University. Dave, thanks for stepping into our AIM studio. And Rachel, thanks for stepping into our Des Moines studio. We appreciate your insights, as always.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at the booming beer business. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.